Have you been hitting the books and listening to lectures all day? It's time to relax, to unwind, and listen up. This is Brooke from Campus Chronicles, your go-to podcast for everything student life. No matter where you are in your academic journey, we have you covered. Think of us as a trusted mentor, friend, and confidant who always has your back. We'll be sharing inspiring stories, thought-provoking insights, and practical advice to help you succeed in and out of the classroom. So get ready to be inspired, enlightened, and entertained. Hello, hello, everyone. I am so excited to introduce you to this amazing guest that we have for you. Her name is Ginger Dunaway, and she is from Spiritual Yogi. Ginger, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Brooke. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
I'm very excited about this particular topic. When Ginger approached me and told me about her experiences finding yoga, I was so inspired. I found yoga at a very young age, and I know that it's been transformative in so many different transitions in my life. But before we go there, give us your origin story, your beginning, if you will.
First of all, I just want to say I'm so excited to talk to this age group because I wish I had found yoga younger, because I do truly believe that it's this life-changing practice. I think it's this supreme tool that I wish every human being could at least know about, that know that it's out there for them. But for me, you know, when I was, you know, we all have our traumas and dramas that we go through in life. For me, mine started at 8 years old. I was a very happy-go-lucky kid. And then my parents went through what I call the childhood drama. My dad flirted with another woman. Doesn't sound like too big of a deal, but to my mom, it was. She had been through watching her dad have an affair on her mom. And when she met my dad, she told him, whatever you do, just don't hurt me. And so when he flirted, it brought up all of this stuff for her. And it started these nightly, I call them nightly dramas. Every night for the first year, they fought, they argued. She went through all these what ifs. You know, because she confronted him about it, she always wondered in her head, if I hadn't have confronted him, would he have then cheated? And so she was in this sort of mental torture chamber. And it was just this long extended, you know, drama that we experienced night after night, you know, her threatening things. The whole thing lasted about 3 years, but it was every night for the first year. And what was cool about it was I remember being this happy-go-lucky kid before it happened. And then afterwards, I felt like an emotional wasteland inside. You know, I was completely, you know, I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to get out of it. I was depressed. I was, you know, of course, all of these things. My parents couldn't help me because they were still trying to, you know, survive themselves. And so I found myself late teens, early 20s, walking around with the weight of the world on my shoulders, feeling very angry, very resentful, blaming my mom. But it also lit a fire in me. Like, I wanted to know what just happened to her. You know, what made that switch flip? And, you know, just understand it on a deeper level. Well, of course, like, you know, we all do, we never want to turn out to be our parents. But I ended up in a relationship where it felt like the more drama, the more love. And fortunately for me, I found yoga in this marriage. I started at 25. And it wasn't even a consistent practice in the beginning. It was more of like a challenge. It was like, I can't, these poses are difficult. I want to just try to do this. But what I noticed is even with this inconsistent practice, things started to change in a drastic way. I felt more secure. I felt very content, confident in who I was, comfortable in my own skin. And I got to this place in this relationship where I realized, you know, I'd for so long wanted to get out, but I was so jealous at that time in my life because I was so insecure that I didn't want him. I didn't want someone else to get him if I, you know, divorced him. And yoga got me to this place where I felt very secure, comfortable. And I realized I wanted him to be happy. I wanted myself to be happy. And so I was able to let that relationship go. And after that, my practice really took off. And that's when I really started to see changes. I became very consistent. And I pretty much sobbed the first 2 years of that consistent practice through the practice. And I didn't realize it then, but I was letting go of all this old emotional energy that was trapped in my body from that childhood drama with my parents that I beforehand, you know, I'd gone to therapy and it was great. But it was like once I walked out the door, you know, after a little while, it just, you know, came right back.
And so many people find that therapy does not move the emotion in your body in the same way that something more physical does.
Yes. Yes. I think, you know, blended with therapy it's amazing. But it, you know, so this was just really releasing a lot of stuff. And I remember walking around thinking, oh my God, I feel so wonderful. I feel content. I feel peaceful. I feel relaxed. I don't blame my mom anymore. And we maintained a good relationship, but it was like I was able to let all that stuff go. Wasn't walking around feeling angry and resentful like I was owed something because of that anymore. I just felt peaceful and content. And I knew that it was this yoga practice that was doing this for me. I just didn't know how. So that's what prompted me to go to yoga teacher training. Did not really want to be a teacher, just wanted to understand how this practice was literally working miracles in my life. And when I came back, I got all this great information. I went to a yoga center up in Massachusetts called Kripalu. And then I came back and I just kept studying and did some self-study and found that, again, it was like I was doing the practice, but found that I was still, in some ways, building more ego or finding myself kind of, you know, getting out of that peaceful center sometimes. And it wasn't until I understood another component of this practice that I think a lot of people either miss or don't know really how to go about doing. And that's the self-study. So you've got the yoga practices, but there's got to be this other component of self-study with it to really help us go deep. And it's almost like the practice between the practice. It's what keeps us able to stay in that peaceful center even when we step off the mat or stop work. And so that is what made me realize that that's a big part. And I just started writing, and I ended up writing my book, Way of the Spiritual Yogi, and I came up with these online courses, and that's where all of my work came from. But what I found so fascinating when I started learning about this practice was that these ancient Indian, they were called Indian strivers. Thousands of years ago, they felt the same way we do.
Which is just mind-boggling to think, because they didn't have the internet pressures or the technological pressures that we attribute to so much of our stress.
They were feeling dissatisfied in life. They were feeling like there's got to be a better way. There's got to be more to it. And they started on the search. And what they found was there was already these teachers out there that were experimenting with seated meditation. And they found that the seated meditation helped them go within. And that to really find that peace, that contentment, that joy, you've got to go within and sort of go through your own ego, past your own ego. And I'll talk about ego in a minute.
And ego is so important because it is easy to get wrapped up in it. I know. I got there.
So they have to go within to find all that stuff. And what's, you know, when you're younger, that doesn't really sound all that cool because you're in the crux of ego development. And so what's more cool is like, you know, competing for things and trying to live up to those expectations of your parents or your teachers or your coaches or whatever. And you sort of get wrapped up in that ego. But when you keep hitting that wall or you keep going through those, hitting those patterns of emotions where you're feeling lonely and isolated, or you're feeling guilty and shameful or angry and resentful or just stressed, anxious, and overwhelmed, you finally get fed up and say, there's got to be a better way, just like these Indian strivers. And this practice is just phenomenal in terms of being able to help us make that shift and go within and go past all of that stuff to find what yoga calls the true nature. I like to call the soul self. And when we do that, what is cooler about that than really, you know, getting stuck in our ego is that when we get to that place where we feel really centered, really peaceful, really present, we're open to our higher guidance. We're open to clarity, insight, inspiration, creativity. And what that does is it tunes us into our own soul's purpose here in life. So rather than getting stuck in ego expectations from parents and teachers and friends and the analytical ego thinking mind, we get back to what we were in tune with as young, as babies and young children, that intuitive soul guided mind. And that helps set us up for, you know, it leads us in the most perfect way for our own life. And it helps us naturally, easily draw in those relationships and life work that we're, you know, that we're really meant to be in life. And so it's just an amazing practice. But the ego itself, you know, it's just a normal part of human development and experience. And it's all the thoughts, beliefs, judgments, opinions that we've learned from parents. And over time, you know, it's almost like we build this mental construct, this ego mental construct around us, you know, filled with all these thoughts, beliefs, how our parents felt about the world, you know, all their different, the ways they saw the world, you know, their different affiliations with things, culture, society, all of that plays a part of how we build our own ego. So all of our egos look a little bit different. But when we hit middle school, that's pretty much the crux of ego development. And that is when we become self-conscious, right? Whereas before you're running out the door to go to school or wherever, now you're stopping in front of the mirror and making sure your clothes aren't wrinkled or you don't have a big zit on your forehead.
And I feel that middle school is when we stop playing as well.
Yes. Yes. You get, yeah, you're self-conscious. You're worried about what other people think of you and you're trying to live up to expectations all of a sudden. And it just, that pressure grows and grows and you start building self-images, which is again, all part of that ego, how you want to look to others, how you want to be perceived by others. And when we start doing that, we start to misidentify ourself with the ego rather than the soul, basically. What it comes down to. And that's where we start to experience that suffering. And Stephen Cope in his book, The Wisdom of Yoga, talks about the ego as the cause of all suffering. And when we talk about, when we think about suffering, a lot of us, we don't even give ourselves credit for suffering because we turn on the news and we see these horrible atrocities happening, or, you know, there's people, you know, living in countries where there's war going on and they're feeling unsafe for their children. And yes, that is definitely suffering. But also, even when your external environment is perfect, but you're experiencing stress, anxiety, overwhelm on a daily basis, or anger and resentment or shame or guilt, that is suffering. And we've got to give ourselves credit for that and realize that there are ways like this practice to help us shift out of that.
When people go into university, they have a major, you know, trying to fit into friend groups, social circles, things of that nature, it is an insurmountable pressure. How can they use yoga? How can someone use yoga and start with yoga to really start to have a deeper introspection about their own life?
Yeah. So, I mean, just get started with the practice, you know, either find a yoga studio or there's lots of online practices, but just starting the practice, it's so amazing what it does. It's when you think about the body postures and movements, it's literally wringing out different areas of the body and wringing out emotional energy that's stuck. It could be emotional energy from yesterday when you were anxious about going to a party, or it could be emotional energy from when you were 8 years old like me, where if you had something that happened, like some trauma or event that's stuck in your body. And so you're wringing out that emotional energy, but it's also, yoga is developing something called witness consciousness when we keep practicing. And I call it our superpower. We all have it. It's this ability to step back from your thoughts and your beliefs and your judgments. Take a step back and start observing them non-judgmentally and just start to realize that you are not your thoughts and your beliefs and judgments, the subsequent emotions that you start to feel based on all of that. And so when you start to hone that witness consciousness through this practice, you're able to take that step back and start to realize that, you know, all of that stuff that's seems so important, especially at that age, it loses that effect on you. And so it reduces your stress, it reduces your anxiety, it seats you more in your soul self, your true self. And all of those pressures lighten, and suddenly you start to, you know, you be more of your authentic self, and you're not trying to be certain ways or look certain ways
or obtain certain things. That is a big source of suffering for so many university students. I'm trying to get a perfect grade. I'm trying to obtain the perfect career, the perfect partner, the perfect friend group. That is a huge source of suffering, is this desire for perfection.
And it puts us in this waiting game for happiness, right? Because it's like, once I get that degree, or once I get the perfect job, or once I find that perfect relationship, then I can be happy. But what you find is, when you finally find something like that, it's never what you expect. And, you know, life is short. I mean, we are, you know, it's short and sweet. So we've got to make it, you know, this is our life. There is no dress rehearsal. We got to get it right the first time. So we got to start now. You know, we got to start doing this practice now and get into the present moment and seated in the soul self now, so that we can enjoy it and find that happiness, that joy, that peace that's an inherent part of the soul self. And then from there, we can really sink in and fully experience life and fully enjoy life, the ups, the downs, the in-betweens completely, you know, not keep, as you're saying, like have these goalposts that we keep having to meet.
So if you feel comfortable rewinding to your university days, how would they have been different if you had yoga?
On the outside, I was having a lot of fun in college, but on the inside, I was very depressed. I was very homesick. I wish I'd had this practice then, because I think it would have changed a lot of things for me. I think it would have changed even my academic path, because it would have tuned me in to more of what I wanted versus what everybody else was doing. But I think for the most part, I think it would have helped me find this place inside that was in this person inside, you know, that was secure and who loved herself and who, you know, could go through those days feeling whole, you know, feeling content and secure and adequate, rather than have to go through feeling very insecure, very inadequate, and really sad and lonely a lot, even though I was, you know, around a bunch of people. And I think that's key in realizing that, you know, you can be in a room full of people and feel completely alone. So yeah, I wish I'd found this practice earlier, just so that it would have made a lot of things, I think, a lot better and a lot different.
Yoga does a beautiful job of making you feel small in the way that your problems don't feel as insurmountable in the grand scheme of the universe. And that's one of the things I love about it. And I did actually change majors through a decision I made during a yoga, is a fun fact about me. And it's been really, really instrumental in my life. Now I'm going to ask you a really hard question. If you could say three pieces of advice regarding the yoga practice, regarding, you know, getting into yoga to university students, what would those three pieces of advice be?
I think I would say at least do something, get started. Because like I said before, I started very inconsistently, and yet it made drastic changes in my life. You know, even if you did something once a week, twice a week, you know, or grabbed some friends and found a place to go take a yoga class somewhere, just get started. It might not be something you're going to get into fully right now, because I'm sure there's lots of other things on their plates, but yes, just get started. And I love that you brought up the intention setting. You know, that's a really beautiful practice in terms of setting intentions for yourself and in your life. You know, what do you want in life? Because when we ask ourselves that question, it really helps us tune in to, what do I want? You know, not from an ego level, but from a soul perspective, like what do you want your life to be about? And just start setting that intention to find that, to be guided to that. And then I think third, when I talked about the yoga developing witness consciousness, you know, start maybe thinking about that, being able to take a step back from your thoughts and beliefs, because you don't have to be on a yoga mat to do that. You know, you can start doing that in your own life on your daily basis right here, right now. You know, notice when you're stuck in your thoughts, beliefs, and patterns and habits and emotions. See if you can, maybe if you're feeling sad, see if you can take that step back and just see the thoughts that are coming up. What's triggering that sadness? You know, and start to be aware in that way. And that the more you do that, the more you develop that witness consciousness, and the more you start to change that, make that shift, which that's the heart of yoga, is just shifting out of that ego that we've, you know, built and developed around us, out back into, you know, what I like to call the soul self. And the more you practice that, the more easily it gets, so that to make that shift, you know, it's a one focused inhale, one focused exhale, and all of a sudden you're back to where you need to be.
Another difficult question, is there a quote, a mantra, something that you live your life by?
There's a lot of them. There's a lot of beautiful ones that I love. There's one that I can, that I know off the top of my head that I do love, and it's Patabi Joyce, who is one of the masters of yoga. But he said, do your practice and all is coming. Just do the practice, you know, and everything else will fall into place, basically. So,
and that's when we think about analysis paralysis, which is a huge thing that affects so many people. For me, I just had to try it, right? And once I tried it, I was able to see those benefits very, very clearly. Sometimes we get scared to do things, but as Ginger has illustrated for us, there is no reason to be scared of the practice. It can be as private or as public as you want it to be. It can be alone, with friends, whatever makes you feel most comfortable. Now, Ginger, I know that you have a program and some offerings. Give us a little insight on that.
Yes. So I have a 12-week program, and I help people establish a consistent yoga practice through guided meditation, movement meditation, breath work, but I also lead them through a 6-step self-study. So I've kind of basically come up with these 6 steps that easily helps you figure out where you are, where you want to be, and the steps to sort of get there. And it also contains what's called a vision quest. So after you go through those 6 steps to the self-study, it's this vision quest to really help yourself tune into how your own soul speaks to you, and being able to tune into that and start listening to that guidance and figure out what your own vision and purpose is for your life. And when I say that, it doesn't have to be some big major thing.
You're not supposed to feel completely scared.
Yes, but a lot of times it's all those little things that, you know, that we are meant to do here in this world. And so it helps tune them into that too. But yeah, it's a 12-week program, and it also includes weekly group coaching calls with me and a live online Zoom yoga class on Sunday mornings, but all to help people sort of really jump in, sink into this practice, and really understand and experience everything that this practice has to offer.
And where can they find the program?
So on my website, it's spiritual-yogi.com.
Mm-hmm. And are you on social media as well?
Yes. I think it's Ginger Graff Dunaway on Instagram. Facebook is Ginger Dunaway.
Okay. And go get in connection and community with Ginger so that you can pick up on some of her wonderful, beautiful vibes that she has been so gracious to share with us here today. Ginger, thank you for sharing your energy, your personal experience, all of your insights. We are so appreciative.
Yes, thank you. Thanks, Brooke.
Thank you for joining me on Campus Chronicles. I hope you found our discussion informative, inspiring, entertaining, and fun. We are always working hard to make sure that our episodes are the very best they can be, which means we need your help. If you liked what you heard, remember to hit the follow button on your favorite podcast platform and drop us a review. It helps us to connect with more students who are hungry for success. And remember, the journey never stops. Keep listening, keep learning, keep growing. See you next week for another amazing episode of Campus Chronicles.